From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 11th installment of our ongoing conversation with Professor Luciana Bone about the construction and operation of the state and economy in what was then known as the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, or the Soviet Union. Luciana, I'm pleased to have you back for our 11th conversation on this topic, and we left off sort of in the adolescent days of fascism and the early part of its rise. And so let's pick it up there.
Okay, thank you, Don. I think that I want to add that remind the listeners that we are really going over this fascist history at almost 100 years old and focusing on Italy because that's where it was born, this movement, as a template, and reminding listeners, too, that the fascism really has native features. And ultimately, we want to explore the question of whether the United States is or is not fascist, specifically Trump. Is that too daring?
Yeah, no, and it's interesting because there's always been mythology that it can't happen here. Which, you know, got probed in popular culture, movies, books and such. There were, you know, It Can't Happen Here as a movie, I think, was one of them. I remember The Mothers of Invention, It Can Happen Here, you know, that stuff. So, and of course, we have seen, if it's not fascism, something certainly with the worst characteristics of that which people agree is fascism, including the propaganda and war making and such. And only, you know, the U.S. has reached these things on a scale that the Germans or Italians could only dream of 70, 80 years ago.
Yeah. And I think the question, why does fascism rise, or rather, it isn't a rise, it's really a decision to have it by the ruling order. I think the fascism responds to a threat to the ruling order.
Right.
And in Italy, this ruling order was socialism and the agitation of workers in the streets. It didn't even have a racist feature in the beginning.
Right.
And so the question is, what threatens the ruling order in the United States that would necessitate the rise of fascism or the installation of fascism? I mean, what is threatening the ruling order in the United States?
Right. And, you know, of course, this conversation assumes that what exists in the United States already, being prior to Trump, isn't fascism. And there are some that argue that, in fact, it is. But understand, we're talking about the overt type.
Yeah, well, that's right. I don't want to skip ahead, but what is the enemy of the social order, I mean, of the ruling order in the United States, I might as well propose the answer that it's the ruling order depends on the control of the world.
Hegemony.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're looking at the 20s or whatever, you know, the ruling order was an earlier form of capitalism.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And so, and what I was going to say is what we're looking at here is a much fuller expression of it, where one particular brand of capitalism had attained or almost attained global hegemony, which is not something that any previous nation state had ever achieved. So, you know, there's different things governing
Britain,
here.
But that's before World War One. Well, okay. Set me on the road, Don. So I'm going back to 1920.
Yes.
Now, 1920. Okay, we are 2 years into the history of fascism in Italy, 2 years. And in 1920, the association that Mussolini had formed called the Movimento, whatever, the fascist movement, took the road of aggression. They had these bully squads, the action squads, and these attacked the headquarters of the left parties, set on fire the offices of the communist and socialist presses. The liberal government was unable to secure the social peace. The fascist movement was gaining consent. Many thought that a hard line could restore order, and the squadristi, the action squad, received support from industrialists and landowners, all those who fear the subversion of the social order, and had already happened in Russia. That was the ghost that haunted Europe.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this reminds me of the southern United States.
Yeah, well, in fact, the fascists invoked that model. Mussolini and Hitler both did, as a model.
Yeah. Violence, right? Terror and
violence.
Yeah,
terror, violence, the subjugation of inferiors, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So in 1921, there were new elections because the parliament was divided. And so they had a populist party in parliament, which was Catholic, and a social democratic party, the two big parties, and they were divided on all issues. Now, remember, I said that Italy had been devastated by the First World War, and so there was a lot of labor agitation. And so they could achieve a majority. So what we had was an electoral crisis, essentially a crisis of legitimacy. So this is the year in which the National Fascist Party is created, and the Fasci Italiani di Combattimento, that is the original movement, are transformed into fascism, with Mussolini at the head. So in 1922, the fascist party from all over Italy came to Rome to show the strength of the party. This is the March on Rome. And it's really a coup. So the king of Italy, you know, all these fascist parties from all over Italy congregate on Rome, and the king, it was a monarchy, and the king of Italy calls on Mussolini to lead the government, arguing that with fascism in the government, there could be no disorder or violence, implying that violence was caused by the fascists,
right.
And they would set, you know, the thing in order.
Yeah.
Whatever he had in mind, he wasn't a genius,
right.
Just an opportunist. So the democratic institutions' reaction to the violence of the fascist squads had been very weak. And after the March on Rome, the liberal government stepped down, and the king nominated Mussolini as head of government. And so this was 1922, and the dictatorship started.
And, you know, that's an interesting thing to note. In each case, I mean, you know, we're talking, these are supposedly populist movements, right? But in each case, Mussolini and Hitler, they come to power after being appointed by the existing power structure. In the case of Mussolini, by the king. In the case of Hitler, by von Hindenburg, the president of Germany.
Exactly, yes. Precisely. Really. So in 1924 there were elections because you needed to legitimize Mussolini.
Right.
He had been governing without a majority for 2 years. Now, the election of Mussolini was called into question by several senators, but the most prominent one is Giacomo Matteotti, who the streets are named after him, the piazzas in Italy. I live in Via Matteotti in Trieste, or rather when I am there. Senator Matteotti, deputy. He denounces the climate of intimidation and violence, irregularities during the electoral campaign. This happened during Hitler's electoral campaign. I mean, the communist members of the parliament, of the German parliament, were imprisoned for a week. The Social Democrats were intimidated, and their presses were disrupted, attacked violently, beaten. So, same procedure, intimidation for elections, during the election. So anyway, Matteotti denounced this climate of violence, and shortly after, he was kidnapped and murdered by the fascists. This is 1924,
yeah.
And the worst, the intensification of fascism occurs after that. So clearly they wanted to intimidate the liberal faction, majority, I suppose, and really asking, you're either with me or you're out.
Right. An interesting thing that happened there, rather than being imprisoned for a week, as in Germany, the leftists and the liberals walked out. The Aventine Secession. So they essentially negated themselves by walking out.
Yes, that's true. So in 1925, Mussolini made an infamous, a horrendous speech, boasting and taking responsibility for Matteotti's murder. So and this is when the repression begins, the house searches, the dissolution of all political parties, except, of course, the fascist parties, the closure of dissenting and party-affiliated newspapers, and so ending the freedom of the press. And you probably want to add what's happening with Sputnik and RT here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's today. Been going on in the UK, for example, with Press TV and others for a few years now, too.
Yeah. So every form of dissent was canceled by repression. Freedom of the press and speech, political parties and unions were dissolved. Many anti-fascist members of parliament were killed or forced into exile. Information was in fascist hands, and propaganda hammered incessantly at the people. That was radio times. So by 1926, Mussolini made laws without the consent of parliament. This is like Hitler issuing the Enabling Act, which was very short and was supposed to last, I don't know, 6 months, but
right.
was continued.
Right.
I don't know if it was 6 months or longer.
No, it was a short
term.
Yeah.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, it was a short term. It was supposed to be an emergency decree to deal with the, the emergency.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but it was kept on because, yeah. So by 1926, Mussolini could make these laws without the consent of parliament. Mayors were no longer elected. They were party nominees, two mayors of the same party. And they are called, I find this amusing, their title was not mayor, but podestà, which means power, that power. And this is really the name Podesta, the way he pronounced it in English, right. Podesta, but it's really right. Podesta. So I wonder what Podesta's background is, family background. But anyway, silly. So the death penalty is reinstated. A special tribunal for the defense of the state is created. It is seated in Rome, but covers all of Italy. It is concentrated, it is concerned, rather, with political crimes, ideological, with syndicalists, what they considered, you know, attempts to organize unions, and journalistic crimes against the fascist state. So we have this special tribunal for the defense of the state, and we, so freedom to unionize is repressed. A law abolishes the right to strike and to close down factories and to impair productivity. So it's a crime against the state, really, to strike or to sit down in factory or take over factory. These fascist laws required the silencing of dissenters. And there were three types of possible dissent. Political dissent, which was tried by the special tribunal, with penalties up to 30 years, and the death penalty, excuse me, for attempts on the life of fascist leaders, mayors, etc. And to monitor dissent, the fascists created in 1927 the political police in plain clothes. The OVRA, the O-V-R-A, the Organization of Vigilance and Repression of Anti-Fascism. If you see, I can't remember who directed it, A Special Day with Sophia Loren and Marcello Mastroianni, was made in the 70s, A Special Day, the day that Hitler comes to Rome to meet Mussolini, and it's a story of a housewife and a homosexual journalist.
Scola.
Scola, that's right. Ettore Scola. It's a very good film to see because it shows the operation of the OVRA. These plainclothes policemen patrolling neighborhoods, and the two of them, these two people, the woman and the man, are left alone while the whole of the neighborhood, the whole of Rome, goes to greet Hitler and Mussolini. This tells you how attracted people are by spectacle.
Right.
And so they are left alone the day, very quiet, and they spend the day together, and I don't want to tell you the whole story, but it's a very good film.
Yeah, it's an interesting film.
Yeah.
And it takes place the day that Hitler visited Mussolini in 1938 in Rome.
Yes.
And it's Mastroianni and Loren. It's,
Sophia Loren. And she looks exhausted because, of course, under Mussolini, you have to, and her husband is a petty bourgeois, fascist member of the fascist party, and just keeps producing children because, you know, for the motherland, you have to produce children. And she's exhausted, and he bosses around. So you have the element of sexism that is connected to fascism,
yeah.
You know, where the ideal is the male.
Hey, you know what's interesting?
No, seriously.
No, understood. What's interesting is that the Fascist Manifesto, the Ambrus and Marinetti, the program supported the creation of universal suffrage for men and women, although it took until 1925 to actually happen, but the fascists actually brought universal suffrage and other things that, you know, appear progressive, including progressive tax, reduction of the retirement age to 55, you know, a number of other things. One really cute thing, too, which is that they set up a system of national councils of professionals and tradespeople, experts. It's sort of like a negative image of the workers' councils that were set up in the Soviet Union, you know, that were the basis of organization, as a matter of fact, in the Soviet Union. But in any event, the point being
mirror
that...
Mirror image and therefore, negative. That's
yes.
Right.
But also the... point here being that although the culture of fascism, it's patriarchal to the extreme. On the one hand, on the other hand, the political program that was espoused, the ideological framework, was one of universal suffrage. Even if it was, well, the woman that's supposed to stay home barefoot and pregnant gets to vote.
Yes. Well, of course, fascism has to produce social harmony.
Right. Political
parties must disappear. Right. There is only one state, and it's a fascist state. Yep. So you have to make concessions and to appear progressive.
Right.
And to boast about it, and to say, fascism is, last century was the century of socialism, and this century will be the century of fascism. And of course, we're moving forward.
Right.
But in addition, Mussolini knew his game. In that sense, he was a great propagandist, because he had been a member of the Social Democratic Party of Europe until 1914.
Yep.
And social democracy, it was called, but it was really socialist.
Right, socialist.
So, until 1914, of course, split the international socialist movement, and he went to war, betraying, the ideals of international, we talked about this before.
Yep.
So he knew all the cards with which to play. He had experience as a journalist in this, went to all the most important meetings in Europe, met all the most important social democrats, etc.
Right.
And then in 1914, he became a nationalist.
And what's
and
interesting?
Then an opportunist.
And as an opportunist, particularly, we'll go back to your point that you made earlier, which is, and that you began to make last week, that just like socialism, comes into being in an already existing society, it takes on the characteristics of that particular society. So does fascism. It's fascism with, national characteristics. So if you are advocating, if you're being an opportunist to sell the real fascist program, which is corporate control of the society, if it's a society where there's no female suffrage, you advocate for it because it draws popular support, et cetera.
That's right. Very, very, very clever. So back to this secret police. And then that the second type of dissent that had to be put down and probably was number one was a potential dissent of workers and peasants, because remember the socialist revolutions of 1919-20-21 swept all of Europe, and as we know it swept the United States as well. Palmer raids and all of those things that we might... The same insurgencies were going on in the United States, but they had been, in Italy, they had been quelled, they had been put down, but there was still the subterranean organization of the former party. So the potential dissent of workers and peasants had to be met, the potentiality of it, because they continue to ask for better pay and concessions in spite of the fact that parties and unions had been abolished. That's probably why he gave them the 55-year, which is amazing, 55th year pension deal.
Right. Yeah, you retire at 55. Here in the United States, we have gone from 65 to 66, 67, and some say it's going to go up to 70. And this is this is fascist
Italy.
The
55 limit existed until 90s. The yep. 90s. I mean, they're shocked that they have to work until age 60. And but since the neoliberalism took off in Europe, well, the task of Berlusconi was to shred the amendment in the Constitution that granted workers' rights.
Right.
Workers' rights amendment was inscribed in the workers' rights, which we don't have. Workers' rights was in the Constitution of Italy. It was put in there in 1970, one of the reasons why the season of terror was unleashed. False flag, strategy of tension.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the years that are known in Italy as the years of lead, of bullets.
Yeah.
And it was a season of terrorism.
Right, Bader-Meinhof, all of that stuff.
False flag, done by the right, blamed on the left. Yes, it was the workers' rights. And this amendment had to be... Berlusconi was tasked and failed and failed and failed, but they're just whittling away as they are in France. But this is interesting. So what he did to combat potential dissent and discontent among workers and peasants, they invented corporazioni, and really. The word confuses Americans because we think of corporations as corporations.
Right.
But in Italian, from the Latin corpus corporis, it means body.
Right.
So now these are organizations we're talking about that unite farmer laborers and their landowners in one body. Factory workers and their bosses in one organic body.
Right.
So that there is no conflict.
Right.
Shop owners and their salespeople, they are all united in a body, and they discuss their problems, and guess who wins?
Right.
It's a little bit of what happened to the American unions in the 1950s when they decided to be partners with business.
Exactly, and we're going to have to pick it up there next week, because I really want to look at the forms, and we can bring that right to the question of the class conflict, because what you have happening, particularly, and I think this is the essential feature of it, of fascism, you have a bringing together, or basically a placing above class the idea of nation. You had in Germany, the blood and soil that... the German blood that comes from the German soil, that unifies us beyond class divisions. So as a German worker or an Italian worker, I have more in common with a German or Italian capitalist than I do with, say, an American or Spanish worker. And that, of course, led to what we saw happen in the 30s, 40s, and even today in the streets around the world. Luciana, thank you very much. We'll pick it up there next week, and we look forward to this and really enjoying it.
Thank you so much, Dan. Always a pleasure to be with you and with your listeners.
Thanks. That's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.